Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are still diving through the long diatribe that President Andrew Jackson had written in vetoing the Cumberland Gap or the Cumberland Road bill that was, in essence, the bill that was going to create the Department of Transportation. This was the third attempt by Congress. Now, clearly, Madison vetoed this bill because there was no connection to what they were trying to do to the enumerated powers within the Constitution. Now, keep in mind, and I said this many times, the responsibility to build post roads was the only responsibility on the shoulders of the federal government or the general government. What is a post road? It's not a road for your postal service. A post road takes you from your state capital to the seat of the national government. Now, as we expanded across this continent with 50 or the 48 contiguous states, post roads were roads that were catching all the other capitals. So like if you look at just Utah and Colorado, Utah, the interstate that goes through Utah from Sacramento over to Colorado, that highway should be going through Colorado, or I should say Denver. But instead, they actually use a different highway. They created a different highway, and they ran that all the way across over to Utah. So if you start looking at how they did the post roads, maybe they chose not to intertwine the different capitals as they were traversing from west to east. But that's what they should have done instead of creating a more expansive network system. Now, even though there were benefits to having a great highway and freeway system, it did expand our ability to do commerce. You have to remember, Madison wanted the Department of Transportation. He thought it would be the best thing for this republic. Monroe felt the same way. The problem was that these powers were not enumerated, so they did not allow them to set up a Department of Transportation. Now, to be honest, the Coast Guard, even though it's considered just a coastal defense for national defense and so forth, the Coast Guard took on a different, and the reason why the Coast Guard took on a different role was because it handled pretty much the really close by traffic dealing with interstate commerce, and that's why it was, I believe, originally in the Department of Transportation and or probably under the Department of Treasury when they started using it. But even in itself, we had a Navy that the Navy should have been able to take care of for national defense purposes, that intent. And so the question was, well, okay, so what about the interstate commerce coming from port to port? And why did they create a different entity for the Coast Guard as for, are the missions really different? Do we need to have something that, because anything that's coming from outside the Republic, any commerce that's sneaking up, smuggling from Mexico into American ports, that would be, and it should be considered a threat, a national threat, and that the Navy should be taking care of it, not the Coast Guard. But anyway, I digress. We could easily go through, and as I was telling somebody the other day, that since we all of a sudden have gone into a different era when we started flying, that the federal government does have a right to establish ports of entry. So if you have an airport that allows international travel, then there needs to be federales there to make sure that smuggling and human trafficking and visas and everything is on the up and up. They have that enumerated responsibility for foreign commerce as well as the flow of people. However, we have digressed so much from what they should have and what they need to have and what they're doing and what they should be doing, that's why going through these vetoes is very illuminating. Because as we go through this, I think you're going to find that Andrew Jackson is definitely taking on a different path than the clear and concise points that Madison and Monroe made. Remember, Madison and Monroe both basically stated that there is no power in the Constitution that will allow them to create this power. And you can already see where Andrew Jackson is trying to walk this down to a point to say yes, but he doesn't. What he's trying to do is he's trying to use a very wordy argument that says, you know, we might actually be able to do this, and it doesn't matter whether there's no power in the Constitution. If we have power to tax, then we can clearly do this. And so I think that's what he's alluding to. He's trying to create precedents, and he believes the precedents has already been set and so forth. So, excuse me. Let me also let you know, because sometimes when I dive straight in from these long reading assignments, that I forget to tell you that the show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that actually goes into these academic dives and provides you academic evidence and provides you enough evidence that is not just academic, but empirical. That we have the facts that they have no ability. There's no amendment to the Constitution to grant the federal government the ability to do all these highway improvements and to tax us into oblivion. These are state responsibilities still. Now, again, I believe it's a good thing that the federal government does. It's a good thing for the republic. But here's the problem and here's the rub I have. The federal government was designed to be outward facing. In other words, to be our primary securer of our liberties from external threats. The militia was the mechanism internally that we were supposed to secure our liberty from internal threats, and that the federal government did have the ability to use them to suppress invasions and enforce laws. And the fact is, as I've been telling you, only the militia has the ability to enforce federal law, or I should say constitutional law. If it's law pursuant to the Constitution, then only the militia has the constitutional authority to do that. The fact that they've created a BLM, the fact that they've created a Department of Forestry and Wildlife and all these other little federal offices is a sleight of hand in the federal government creating a standing army to enforce laws that they know are unconstitutional, that they know they could not get the militia. Because if we were following the Constitution, the militia, the state governors would actually go, huh, now let me see here. That's not an enumerated power, and you want us to enforce it? But instead, we've become lackadaisical in allowing them to enforce their own laws. Well, when you can do that, when a child can actually create a rule and then give themselves the power to enforce it, well, you know they're going to run amok, right? So anyway, this is the show that will provide you the evidence necessary to help you come to the epiphany that the federal government is in such non-compliance of the Constitution. We have no other course than to audit them and to force them using the Constitution, not guns, to get them into compliance. I tell people all the time, we do not need to have another revolution. the divine hand of providence gave us the Constitution and all the tools necessary within that Constitution to fight our cause and demand compliance. Now, when we're done with this Andrew Jackson diatribe, we're going to dive into one of the most insightful lectures Madison gave on that floor of the House of Representatives, and it's the cod fishery bounties. And I believe he did it in 1792, and it was when they started trying to use the general welfare clause for all sorts of types of things. Very specifically, they wanted to use it for the general purpose of helping out the cod fisheries up in the Northeast. And so that was, you know, the federal government trying to drift outside the enumerated powers. And so, long story short, what we have is a very brilliant articulation. And actually, Madison tries to use shock value. So we're going to get into that as well. I don't have enough time to plug Red State Coffee, but if you have not gotten Red State Coffee, then I would add, and you drink coffee, you know people that do, buy it and help support the show. And then what you can do is you can, you know, give it away to people and say, hey, what do you think of this? And if they're not willing to call up, you can call up and say, hey, I gave this to some real coffee connoisseurs and they thought this was fabulous. We need your help, and you can actually help us advertise. That's why we want you to call, but we'll get into that when we come right back from these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. I know everybody wants an opportunity to provide help, assistance, and or input, or what have you, and you are more than welcome. What we want to do is bring you in as much as possible to provide input, help, and the like. One of those ways is we have a sponsor. It's Red State Coffee. And if you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, you can click on the link to the Red State Coffee. It is right there on the homepage, reclaimingtherepublic.org. You don't have to click on any other links other than you go there and you can find your Red State Coffee. And when you get that, and you taste it, and you taste it all the way down to the final cup, you call us 425-270-5416. Let us know what you think. Is it too strong? Is it too robust? I mean, I understand subjectivity. I truly do. I understand that some people like a lot of treble and bass in their music. Some people like the natural sound of the instruments instead of tweaking the treble and bass. It is all about subjectivity. We want to have things the way we like them, and that's why we have so many different things in our life that allow us to do that. However, this is a premium coffee, and so we would ask that you give it a try. This way, you're actually buying something that's supporting the show, that's something that you're already consuming, and we would ask that you let us know what you think so that you can help, because I believe your descriptions, your words, are far better than mine. I believe that there are those who drink. I love the smell of coffee. I love the smell of coffee. And this smells like a truly premium roast. So I would ask that you give it a try and, you know, let us know what you think. That way you can actually help me articulate the qualities, because I'm not a coffee drinker. But you as a coffee drinker can help us out by letting other people know how good this is, because we would like to actually, and how good would that be, making Red State Coffee a household name like Folgers or Maxwell House. And maybe we'll create a Red State jingle that, you know, everybody else. And I'm only going to share this with you because it just popped into my head. I learned about a friend of mine when I was going to school. We were in high school, and his mother, and this guy's a pretty, you know, not humble. He's just one of those guys. He's an introvert. He doesn't like people knowing about him because he just gets embarrassed easily. And his mother commented to a bunch of, you know, we were all over at their house, a bunch of friends. And she commented that when he was a little boy, every time the Maxwell House commercial came on, he would jump around like the coffee was percolating. And we all just had a great laugh. Anyway, because you see this guy that, you know, you just couldn't see him doing that today. And so we all had a good laugh. But anywho, who knows? We might have a jingle that's just as effective as Maxwell House and get your little kids popping around the house or what have you, like they've drank from the coffee bean itself. We have another way to support us, and that is our crowdfunding on GoFundMe. That link is right underneath the Red State Coffee link on our homepage, reclaimingtherepublic.org. One of the things I do want you to consider is I want you to consider, because we're a week out, a week from today is Constitution Day, and we would like you to set aside that day. Next week, we are going to begin reading the Constitution. We're going to try to get through it, but I'm going to try to point out as well how the Constitution is being violated. And I want to focus on some very specific things, such as your representation. And Keith Broders has been constantly trying to come up with a different way of spinning this. And so I'm going to ask him if he can, because there's like five or six states that are three representative states, and what electoral college representatives is what I mean. They have two senators and one representative. And so with that, I would like to have him, because he can do the math to figure out how these states are not receiving a fair representation because of the way they have been granting representation, giving it away to others. And Washington, D.C. is I think it's the overlord in representation. So I'm going to have this conversation with him this week so that he can actually focus, because he's been focused on Wyoming with 500,000 people. I believe Washington, D.C. has far less people, and they have greater representation than every other state, just because they have unconstitutional representation. I've talked about this before, but when we go through the Constitution, we're going to highlight this. We're going to hit on this because Washington, D.C. should have zero representation, period. So with that, I would ask, because they actually have three Electoral College votes, and they shouldn't. The Electoral Colleges is for the states, not for Washington, D.C. That is the seat of government, and the federal government has exclusive legislation, and so they have granted themselves this ability to give themselves Electoral College representation. So with that, let me just kind of dive forward with one more thing. Again, I've already talked about Constitution Day, but the one thing I haven't probably mentioned in a few days is thanking you for tuning in. I know that sometimes it's painful listening to me reading these, the words that they use. Some of them are arcane, some of them just hard for me to pronounce, but it's really important. You know, I wouldn't be reading this if I knew that everybody was reading this like I knew the Christians were reading their scriptures. And the reason why these words are important, just like reading your scriptures, is if you want to understand how we've deviated and how we've perverted our scriptures, or I should say the doctrines of Christianity, you got to read the scriptures. You got to understand that there is... You know, you can let people try to connect dots for you, but they are manipulating you. That's what they've been doing with our Constitution. That's what they've been doing with the scriptures. And unfortunately, there's such a small percentage of Christians reading the scriptures today that they do not recognize that certain things should not be considered an embraced doctrine. And I will leave that for you to read, because this isn't about restoring Christianity. This is about restoring our constitutional republic. As I tell pastors, as I tell religious leaders, it is mine and our job to get government out of the way, so that, because the problem is government has been influencing religions in ways that they have no authority to do so. They have no authority to dictate doctrines, and they've been using the education system to counter the doctrines of Christianity, which they have no business doing that too. That goes right, it flies in the face of the Bill of Rights, which, by the way, in December is when we'll read the Bill of Rights. That's because that's when the Bill of Rights was passed out to the states for ratification. Anyway, what we want to do is get you to ask your fellow friends, hey, have you heard G.R. Mobley's Reclaiming the Republic? He actually reads the Constitution. He reads founding documents, documents of significance and relevance to our Constitutional Republic, and he educates us on how far we have gotten outside the boundaries of the Constitution and what we need to do to get back our constitutional republic. If we do not do this, we're losing time. If we do not do this, we will capitulate, because the Bolshevik Revolution is coming. I am going to be posting a graphic of demographics, and I am going to show you how close we are. I am predicting that by 2024, there will be enough Bolsheviks within the electoral process. And what is a Bolshevik? It is a Communist Party member. And remember I said, Lenin stated, give me the children for 8 years and I will create Bolsheviks for life. It's a pretty bold statement. And in America, we've been able to overcome some of this, but I don't think that we have been that aggressive until these last probably 10, 15, 20 years, where they have been pumping all sorts of insidious doctrine down the throats of our children. That's why these children are foaming at the mouth to surrender their liberties. Like, what's that twisted face kid, David Hogg. I mean, if you look at what he's trying to do, he is trying to pervert and supporting the undermining of our Constitution. He is actually calling for an outright rebellion against the Constitution. It's one thing to say, we have better liberties if we surrender our guns and we need to amend the Constitution, instead of demanding government pass laws. The only way we have a course, they have a constitutional course of taking away the Second Amendment is through a constitutional amendment. However, these folks, just like the rest of these evildoers, are trying to actually pervert the system by just creating laws and banning them, making them illegal, which is a violation of the Constitution. In other words, they're calling for constitutional violations so that they can get their way. And I'm sorry it doesn't work that way, but we're at a hard break. And when we come back, it will be President Andrew Jackson admonishing Congress to do what he thinks is best. And we'll be right back with that. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. Okay, so Andrew Jackson is considering this bill that would have created the Department of Transportation, and he's vetoed it and has sent it back for Congress to try to do something different. Now, Monroe and Madison admonished them and said, you have to amend the Constitution. And fundamentally, Jackson's already said that as well. He says it would make his, I think he's doing this long diatribe to say it would make my job a lot easier, because he knows he would be violating his oath of office if he signed an unconstitutional bill into effect. And so let's start over with the paragraph. Although many of the states, for those of you who are reading along, although many of the states, with a laudable zeal and under the influence of enlightened policy, are successful applying their separate efforts to works of this character, the desire to enlist the aid of the general government in the construction of such as from the nature ought to devolve upon it, and to which the means of the individual states are inadequate, is both rational and patriotic. And if that desire is not gratified now, it does not follow that it never will be. which doesn't make sense because bottom line, if you really need a road, you create the road. If you need a roof over your head, you create a roof over your head. You may not have the means at that time, so you live in a lean-to, you do what you can, but you do what you should do. Now, it's in human nature for everybody to try to get somebody to do something for them. In other words, well, let's get these guys to do it for us so we don't have to. Yeah, that's a good idea. And so if you understand in some ways the state governments were violating the Constitution by constantly asking the federal government to help them with these roads. The general intelligence and public spirit of the American people furnish a sure guarantee that at the proper time, this policy will be made to prevail under circumstances more auspicious to its successful prosecution than those which now exist. But great as this object undoubtedly is, it is not the only one which demands the fostering care of the government. The preservation and success of the Republican principle rest with us. To elevate its character and to extend its influence rank among our most important duties and the best means to accomplish this desirable end are those which will rivet the attachment of our citizens to the government by their choice, by the comparative lightness of their public burdens, it's burdens, not burdens, and by the attraction which the superior success of its operation will present to the admiration and respect of the world. Through the favor of an overruling and indulgent providence, our country is blessed with general prosperity and our citizens exempted from the pressure of taxation which other less favored portions of the human family are obliged to bear. In other words, you know, what we're suffering from taxation compared to other countries is a stark difference. Yet it is true that many of the taxes collected from our citizens through the medium of imposts have for a considerable period been onerous or a burden. In many particulars, these taxes have borne severely upon the laboring and less prosperous of the class of the community being imposed on the necessary of life. And this too, in cases, and he doesn't say how they were more of a burden for them than they were for others. In cases where the burden was not relieved by the consciousness that it would ultimately contribute to make us independent of foreign nations for articles of prime necessity by the encouragement of their growth and manufacture at home. The old free market prospect. Because bottom line is, if you need a roof over your head, you build a roof or you get somebody else to do it. And so he was obviously talking about the competition of foreign goods coming in, and if they keep on making imposts and taxes, such as what we should be doing with China, the pressure will come, and you can tell that this is how they were doing it then. The pressure will come within to start providing these types of products on our own or from a different source. Anyway, they have been cheerfully borne because they were thought to be necessary to the support of the government and the payment of the debts unavoidably incurred in the acquisition and maintenance of our national rights and liberties. But have we a right to calculate on the same cheerful acquiescence when it is known that the necessity for their continuance would cease were it not for regular improvement and unequal appropriations of the public funds? I'm going to highlight this for you because what he says is that they would cease, the necessity for their continuance would cease were it not for irregular improvement, irregular improvident and unequal appropriations of the public funds. What does he mean by that? So what he means is that they're violating the uniformity clause by providing more highways and providing more assistance to some states that are developing. Now let's look at this. We had new states coming in, and these new states were not equal footed with highways and commerce and so forth. They were just starting off. And so obviously they were asking the federal government so that they could get, you know, better highways and better improvements so that they could get to that same position of the rest of the states. That is a violation. As you understand, the federal government cannot just give one state or a new state benefits where it does not do the same thing for the other states. And this kind of goes down that path of, if you've ever seen those videos of where people are unequal because some people have a head start from everybody else. Well, that's the same thing here. It's not fair that Massachusetts and Virginia have this huge head start, or New York, they have this huge head start. And so we need to take from them to give to us so that we can be equal with them. That is the same concept. And that is folly, because that is socialism. And the federal government was restricted from being able to do that, to take from the richer to give to the poor. And that's what they were doing, because that's what he just clearly said. The necessity for their continuance would cease were it not for irregular, improvident, and unequal appropriations of public funds. Will not the people demand, as they have a right to do, such a prudent system of expenditure as will pay the debts of the Union and authorize the reduction of every tax to as low a point as the wise observance of the necessity protect that portion of our manufacturers and laborers whose prosperity is essential to our national safety and independence will allow? When the national debt is paid, and the duties upon those articles which we do not raise may be repealed with safety, and still leave, I trust, without oppression to any section of the country, an accumulating surplus fund which may be beneficially applied to some well-digested system of improvement. And so he still has this concept that they can do these things. Oh, well, we've got the money, and so why don't we make these improvements? Well, if it's not an enumerated power, the federal government can't meddle with it or do it, period. And so nowhere yet has Andrew Jackson uttered those critical constitutional words that it is not within their jurisdiction. Under this view, the question as to the manner in which the federal government can or ought to embark in the construction of roads and canals, and the extent to which it may impose burdens on the people for these purposes, may be presented on its own merits, free of all disguise and every embarrassment, except such as may rise from the Constitution itself. Assuming these suggestions to be correct, will not our constituents require the observance, of course, by which they can be effected? Ought they not require it, with the best disposition to aid, as far as I can consciously, in furtherance of works of internal improvement? My opinion is that the soundest views of national policy at this time, it shouldn't have anything to do with time bound. It is either within the Constitution or not. And he's just saying, so the best thing we should do at this time, like, they have these abilities to, change what they want to their wills and desires. Anyway, at this time, point to such course besides the avoidance of an evil influence upon the local concerns of the country. How solid is the advantage which the government will reap from it in the evaluation of character? How gratifying the effect of presenting to the world the sublime spectacle of a republic of more than 12 million happy people in the 54th year of her existence, after having passed through two protracted wars, the one with the acquisition and the other for the maintenance of liberty. And so with that, we will have to take a break. And so we will be right back with more of what Andrew Jackson wants to espouse right after these two promos. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so let me start off where that last long paragraph left started. It's almost a paragraph. It's just actually a sentence. How gratifying the effect of presenting to the world the sublime spectacle of a republic of more than 12 million happy people in the 54th year of her existence, after having passed through two protracted wars, the one for the acquisition and the other for the maintenance of liberty. So he's talking about the Revolutionary War and the 1812. Free from debt and from all her immense resources, unfettered, what a salutary influence would not such an exhibition exercise upon the cause of liberal principles and free government throughout the world? When he says liberal, he's talking about the classical liberal. In other words, where every individual is free and unfettered from government and controls and so forth to pursue their own dreams. Even though he was a Democrat, he was not a communist at this point in time, but he was the beginning of the growth of government, because you got to remember the Democratic Party took on the ideologies of the Federalist and a centralizing, more powerful, larger, and itself aggrandizing central government. Anyway, he moves on and says, would we not ourselves find in its effect an additional guarantee that our political institutions will be transmitted to the most remote posterity without decay? A course of policy destined to witness events like these cannot be benefited by legislation which tolerates a scramble for appropriations that have no relation to any general system of improvement and whose good effects must by necessity be very limited. In the best view of these appropriations, the abuses to which they lead far exceed the good which they are capable of promoting. They may be resorted to as artful expedients
to shift upon the government the losses of unsuccessful private speculation, and thus, by ministering to personal ambition and self-aggrandizement, tend to sap the foundations of public virtue and taint the administration of the government with a demoralizing influence. Well, that's interesting. It's good to see that he's actually recognizing that there has to be limits. In the other view of the subject, and the only one remaining, which it is my intention to present at this time, is involved the expediency of embarking in a system of internal improvement without a previous amendment to the Constitution, explaining and defining the precise powers to the federal government over it. Assuming the right to appropriate money to aid in the construction of national works to be warranted. Where in the Constitution did they get the power and be delegated the power to do national works? It is a self-derived, self-aggrandized power, period. Anyway, the national works to be warranted by the contemporaneous and continued exposition of the contemporaneous and continued exposition of the Constitution. The Constitution's a contract. The Constitution delegated very defined powers, not some self-aggrandizing, growing, living thing that apparently he was presuming that it is. Its insufficiency for the success of prosecution of them must be admitted by all candid minds. If we look to usage to define the extent of the right that will be found so variant and embracing so much that has been overruled as to involve the whole subject in great uncertainty and to render the execution of our respective duties in relation to it replete with difficulty and embarrassment, it is in regard to such works as the acquisition of additional territory that the practice obtained in first footing. In most, if not all, other disputed questions of appropriation, the construction of the Constitution may be regarded as unsettled if the right to apply money in the enumerated cases is placed on the ground of usage. So he's actually trying to change the interpretation of the Constitution. This subject has been one of much and, I may add, painfully reflection to me. It has bearings that we are well calculated to exert powerful influence upon our hitherto prosperous system of government, and which, on some accounts, may even excite despondency in the breast of an American citizen. I will not detain you with the professions of zeal in the cause of internal improvements. If to be their friend is a virtue which deserves commendation, our country is blessed with an abundance of it, for I do not suppose there is an intelligent citizen who does not wish to see them flourish. But though all are their friends, but few, I trust, are unmindful of the means by which they should be promoted, none certainly are so degenerate to desire their success at the cost of that sacred instrument with the preservation of which it is indissolubly bound our country's hopes. If different impressions, are entertained in any quarter, if it is expected that the people of this country, reckless of their constitutional obligations, will prefer their local interests to the principles of the Union, such expectations will, in the end, be disappointed. Or if it be not so, then indeed has the world but little to hope from the example of free government. In other words, are we going to put our local interest over the national interest? Well, you know what, my friends? We created a federal constitutional hybrid republic where the federal government or the general government has very defined powers. Everything was left to the states to do with what their desires. not for, you know, and it shouldn't be where they have to put aside their local interests so that they can serve some national higher actualization or realization of need. This right here is hyperbole, and as far as I'm concerned, very dangerous what he's talking about, because in the wisdom of providence, we were given a very defined and limited government. When an honest observance of constitutional compacts cannot be obtained from the communities like ours, it need not be anticipated elsewhere, and the cause in which there has been so much martyrdom and from which so much was expected by the Friends of Liberty may be abandoned, and the degrading truth that man is unfit for self-government admitted. And this will be the case if expediency be made a rule of construction in interpreting the Constitution. Power in no government could desire a better shield for the insidious advantages which it ever ready to make upon the checks and designs to restrain its actions. It's not power, it's restraint. The Constitution did not give power. It created restraints, checks, and balances to ensure that our central government did not become so powerful. Moving on, he says, but I do not entertain such gloomy apprehensions. If it be the wish of the people that the construction of roads and canals should be conducted by the federal government, it is not only highly expedient but indispensable necessary that a previous amendment to the Constitution, delegating the necessary power and defining and restricting its exercise with the reference to the sovereignty of states, should be made. Now, so, okay, I'm applauding what Jackson is saying, but he's talking out of every side of his mouth, front, side, to the left, side to the right, obliques and backwards and so forth, because it sure seems to me that he's trying to say that the government can do these things and we should be doing these things, but he still leans back on this one thing, that the Constitution must be amended. Moving on, without it noting extensively useful, can be affected the right to exercise as much jurisdiction as it is necessary to preserve the works and to raise funds by the collection of tolls to keep them in repair cannot be dispensed with. The Cumberland Road should be an instructive admonition of the consequences of acting without this right. Year after year, contests are witnessed growing out of efforts to obtain the necessary appropriations for completing and repairing this useful work. Whilst one Congress may claim and exercise the power, a succeeding one may deny it, and this fluctuation of opinion must be unavoidably fatal to any scheme which, from its extent, would promote the interests and elevate the character of the country. The experience of the past has shown the opinion of Congress is subject to such fluctuations. Now, I'm here to tell you that it should not be able to fluctuate. The states have a responsibility to keep Congress in check. And so with that, we'll cover the rest of his last two pages tomorrow. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.
I am G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.